Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. I'll just let you know, everybody has just been kind of shot out of a cannon, so we're ready to go. I hope you are. Put on your safety belts. It'll be a bumpy ride.
Hey!
Hey, good morning. Let me introduce everybody who's on the show. First and foremost, before I introduce anybody else, despite what you may have heard, despite what you may have read on the internet, despite what you may have overheard in casual conversation, Rosemary has not been fired, and she is not dead. She is here with us. She is alive.
Shrill as ever.
Shrill and obnoxious and annoying and sarcastic and sardonic as ever.
I'm dialing it back.
Hey, you got a letter about shrill, didn't you? What was that about?
I did. It was really nasty. Did you read that one?
Oh, I read it.
So go ahead. Tell us about that one.
Well, a man wrote and said, I'm so glad you got rid of that shrill Armeo and found someone intelligent. And so I sent him his own personal shrill message and said that men call women. They disagree with shrill. It's really sexist. And he responded again that my calling his objection sexist was proof of his visceral reaction against me. And I said, well, I have a visceral reaction too. Bite me.
And exactly. And
he just wrote
make
classic.
Make friends wherever you go.
I know. Well, my mother says that you he who has... he hath no friends who has made no foes. So there it is. I'm expecting 5 or 6 friends just from that one assault.
So then about 2 days later, the guy writes me and he says, I just realized that Rosemary copied you on the note, and I'm wondering why she did that. And I said, I asked her to just so when she tells our listeners to bite them, I know. That was all?
I send all my insulting messages.
There's
or
a
my
list of all the listeners.
There are a few, actually.
I said it's nothing other than I'm curious as to who she says bite me to. That's all.
Yeah. I love
very
that
long
joke.
List.
Congratulations.
No, it's a very short list. Mostly, I love our listeners. I love discussing things with them. And even when we disagree, there's usually really excellent exchanges, you know, where I actually do learn new things and get a new perspective. This was not one of those.
All right. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
Do you care to tell people where you were?
Yeah, I worked with a group called the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, and I helped edit a series on Russian money laundering. I'm very proud of it. It was cited in the New Yorker magazine this week. It's a vast criminal conspiracy, and there are ties, not anything, it's something Senate and House should look into, ties with the Trump administration.
All right. So that is...
Trump business empire, not administration. It's hard to tell them apart.
We welcome you
back. It sure is.
It's very nice to have you you here.
It's wonderful.
All right. See, ladies and gentlemen, we didn't fire her. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here and in studio, so it's good to see you too. When I came in, I gave Rosemary a big hug and a kiss, and I said, "Welcome back." And I said, "I would do that to Alan, but I'm afraid he'd slug me."
Not true.
All right. Well, it's good to see you too. I'm glad. How you feeling there, buddy? All right. Okay. We also have Chris Churchill with us. He is the Times Union columnist, and he's bleeding like a sieve. But we're cut himself shaving.
Yeah, I may get gradually weaker as the show goes on. Is that why you didn't give me a hug and a kiss?
Chris?
Boy, he's getting feisty.
Chris, we all get gradually weaker as the show goes on. we also want to welcome John Cosse, who is with us. He is our wonderful intern. He hails from where in England?
Manchester.
Manchester.
Well, kind of Manchester.
Or Manchester.
I live in the middle of nowhere, but I say Manchester because that gives some perspective on where roughly I live in the country.
What brought you to Albany?
I'm on an exchange. So I'm here. This is the second of 2 semesters, and then I got to go back.
Tell them where you go.
I go to SUNY Albany.
That's right,
excellent.
Joe. That's right. Joe wanted to know what did they get?
Yeah, what did they get?
We got you.
What did they get? We don't know.
I don't know. Like, only time will tell.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Chris, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot here, because I know everybody else is. But are you in your 30s still?
No.
Okay. I was going to say, because I think we have somebody in their 20s. Are you? You're 40s. Yeah. Okay. Because I'm in my 40s. So I was thinking we have sort of all the bases covered here, of decades.
Sorry to disappoint.
No, that's
I can
okay.
lie about it if you want. Represent, I'm 39, actually.
Okay, represent the 30s.
So am I. That's
okay.
So funny.
Yeah, I'll take a 30s
look, I'm 49, so I'm just barely there. So that's fine. But this is good. It's a nice perspective.
Nobody's
I like
mentioned
it.
Me.
Well, we have no, a genuine millennial specimen.
That
here.
Was the
that's
point.
That's the point.
So we have.
I'm a specimen.
You are.
We have a 22-year-old. And we have
a 75-year-old.
Right. That's the perspective, and a lot of people in between. So
we need a toddler.
No, we don't.
He would be the one in the White House.
Here comes the mail.
All right.
Will you
well,
people please
get
stop,
serious.
Stop talking about nonsense.
I hate those letters. Okay. good morning and welcome. So I've introduced everybody, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right.
Excellent.
and you're Joe length. Donahue.
And at some point during the break, we can give Chris a transfusion. So let's talk about what's going on in the news, because that is, after all, why we're here. It'd be hard pressed to tell in the first couple of minutes, but here we go. I will admit that because Rosemary has been gone for several weeks, we are going to talk about the news of the day, but I also want to catch up just on our thoughts about what the hell has happened over the
Wow.
You missed some good stuff there.
Oh, I didn't miss it. Yeah.
No, I know you didn't miss it.
Donald
but I mean,
Trump is definitely the topic of conversation overseas as well as here.
Yes. I meant we missed your comments on those issues.
Yeah, so they would have been pointed.
I tried to pick some stories that would maybe bring us back to things like healthcare and so forth.
Okay.
All right. So senators leading the investigation into Russian interference in the November election pledged on Wednesday to conduct an aggressive inquiry, including an examination of any ties to President Trump, as they sought to distance themselves from the flagging efforts in the House. In a conspicuous show of bipartisanship during a fractious time at the Capitol, the top Republican and Democrat of the Senate Intelligence Committee vowed to forge ahead by interviewing key players connected to Mr. Trump and pressing intelligence agencies to provide all relevant information. This all happens, of course, as the Republican chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes of California, is perceived to be very close with the Trump White House, which has raised doubts about his ability to conduct an impartial investigation. And that investigation seems to be on hold, stalled, at least for several weeks. Rosemary, I give you the honor of going first.
Okay. Nunes is a jerk. He's not perceived to be connected to the White House. He was part of the transition team. He's definitely connected. And he is trying to give them cover. The problem is he has been so incredibly inept at it, he's hurt them more than anything. If you wanted to protect them, you don't switch your car and do that cloak and dagger garbage of going into the White House grounds in the middle of the night. And now Sean Spicer is hiding who the heck let him in, who gave them the secret room where he got the secret information that no one knows about. It's all so nutty that indeed the two senators from the Intelligence Committee and that side of the House, that side of the legislature, who came out and said, look, we have 20 people we're going to talk to. We're going to do a real investigation. They seemed eminently, they were like statesmen in comparison. And that also worries me, because one of the questions from the press then was, are you going to look at whether the Russians now are getting a reward? Are they being, was there a problem? And the Russians for helping Trump win now are getting favorable treatment. That would seem to me. And the answer was, no, that's not within the realm of our investigation. We look to you to do that. And Senator Burr pointed to the journalists assembled. So it's still up to journalists to monitor what's really going on. That should not be happening. I think we're up to the job and we're working on it, but it should be government that's looking into what's going on. So Nunes has just complicated this. Just do an investigation and let's find out what's going on. That's my view.
Okay. Alan.
Well, you know, this is now gotten to be sort of out of hand. First of all, by Nunes doing what he did and disgracing his house and disgracing his office, he really has made the Senate into the go-to place. And
right.
And the Senate is really doing it right so far. Now, you can be sure that there's an awful lot going on that we just don't know. So, for example, how about the the president taking his daughter and making her an official in his administration.
A federal employee.
Yeah, a federal employee. How about the fact that the son-in-law is also, you know, a full-fledged
the daughter's husband.
Yeah, an advisee. How about the fact that there are people who say there is an anti-nepotism rule, but somehow that seems to be overlooked, like so many other things that Trump is doing is overlooked. So what I'm thinking here is that there may be something deeper. If you make somebody an official in the White House, then you can invoke executive privilege when it comes to asking them to testify somewhere. And they say, well, we don't have to do that because we're an executive, you know, in the White House. That bothers me a lot. Nixon tried that, as you may remember, with the tapes, the Nixon tapes. And he was told, no, you got to produce the tapes. So my hope is that this thing is beginning to unfold to the place that it needs to be.
Chris?
I don't really get why the Ivanka thing bothers people so much. I don't know. I mean, it seems like they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. If they didn't make her an official employee, then everyone's screaming about the ethics, how she doesn't have to comply with ethics rules. And if they do make her an official employee, everyone's screaming
unpaid, we should know.
Right, an unpaid employee, everyone's screaming about... I mean, I get the nepotism thing, but it's also important for any president to have people that he trusts around him, right? And Ivanka may be a moderating influence on the president, for all we know. So the outrage about this kind of confuses me a little bit.
She and Chelsea get along extremely well. Every time you look in a newspaper, you see them hugging.
I'm a lot more worried about Prince Jared myself than Ivanka.
I mean, wouldn't have been a big deal if Chelsea got a role in the Clinton administration. I wouldn't have been surprised by that at all, or mm-hmm. was some sort of advisor to her mother.
Well, she didn't, and could have, should have, would have, but we can let that one go. But I think you're just wrong, Chris.
Well, can I just interject this, because I heard this conversation last night. There was a big debate on, I believe it was MSNBC, where they were saying she wasn't qualified for the job. Which, you know, by the way, I think you can look at a lot of people with this administration and question as to whether they're qualified for the job or not. Well, she seems very qualified for this particular job, which is, to, as you say, to be an influence on her father as far as...
give him advice. That's right. All I really mean.
Yeah, but what did you know and when did you know it? And that's why I think this is important, because I do think that they're going to ask these questions when they come before the Senate committee, and probably under oath. My bet is you're going to find an objection to their appearing, because I don't think these people are going to want to perjure themselves.
You're talking about Jared and Jared specifically, yes.
Yeah, well, that might apply more to Jared than Ivanka, I think. I can't see her being the linchpin of any sort of Russian.
But what did she know and when did she know it?
Her business, I think, might have been involved. And that's really what bothers me about Ivanka, paid, unpaid, government employer or not, is that there continues to be confused lines between the Trump business empire and the Trump administration.
Well, and that's why people objected to her not being an employee,
correct,
right? Because she
yeah.
didn't have to comply
yeah, yeah, yeah.
with all the ethics
rules. You're totally right
about
that.
And now she
that.
Does, and people are still mm-hmm. upset. So it's almost like they can't win. I mean, unless they just pushed her out of the White House entirely, which obviously isn't going to happen.
Right.
So when it comes to this investigation, with the Senate moving forward, does the House then just sort of cede to the Senate, or they just keep going, right?
What are they doing now? What hearings they had scheduled have been canceled.
Yes.
Nothing else is scheduled. Haven't they stopped?
Well, they claim that they will take up after the Easter break, but we don't know if that's true. But also, meanwhile, the Senate has said that we're going to pretty much do what they were going to do. We're only going to do it faster.
And we can only hope
that's
it's
good.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this White House is not going to sit still while these hearings are going on, while people are being asked to appear under oath. And we know what we at least heavily suspect what happened with Nunez and his visit to the White House and all the rest of it. So I'm not taking anything to the bank yet.
John, what do you make of all this?
Well, I'm not completely up to date on everything that's going on, but I thought what you were saying, Chris, is quite interesting, because I think your points are valid as well, but at the same time, it's not so much about my personal opinion. I wouldn't object to Ivanka getting that particular position, but I would object to the principle of surrounding yourself with only people that you get to choose, and specifically like family members. I think that is, in terms of principle, I think that's quite counterproductive.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. This is the way Trump has always been, right? I mean, his business enterprise was weird, because it was as opposed to a public company where you have all sorts of different people. You know, it was a family affair, which is pretty rare in the business world these days, at least at that level. But
that's private, and this is public.
Right, I know there's a difference. But, you know, presidents need people they can trust. And if he trusts her, I don't really have... I mean, of all the things that are going on, this just doesn't seem to be worth the commotion, you know what I mean? And the other part of it, too, is, I mean, people say nepotism, but it isn't like this was a publicly advertised job that anybody could have applied for. I mean, this is to be the close personal advisor of the president. I mean, there's only probably two or three people in the world who would qualify for that role in the Trump sphere.
I agree with Chris. I don't like Ivanka. I think she puts a faux air of gentility and actually even feminism on an administration that is anything but. However, if you're going to worry about people in the government payroll, Steve Bannon,
right? Who do you want? Who do you want to listening to?
Kushner,
Bannon or,
right.
or Ivanka?
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And also, but we seemed that there is that often that is kind of the buffer that he is creating around himself to either protect or to at least mitigate some of the influence that those other individuals have, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least that seems to be the case.
That way.
Do you think surrounding himself with people like Ivanka, do you think she would be the kind of person that would challenge him on something? Because I think the best possible thing that he could do would, even if people like Bannon or whatever, if people are in a position where they would challenge him and at least make him reconsider, I think that would be important.
I think she's more likely to challenge him than anybody else because...
And get away with it.
Right, because, probably, because yeah. she's family. He can't toss yeah. her out of the administration or, yeah. you know, I mean...
Although he was mad, she went skiing. Okay, let's take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. We have a full panel today. Alan Chartok, Rosemary is back, John Cassay is here, and Chris Churchill, who seems to be doing quite well right now. You're
great.
Okay, all right. Welcome back to the roundtable. For all the people in this room, we are now on the air. Just so you know, we're all on the air.
Okay, I'm quiet.
Like all of a sudden, people got quiet and like very proper, and I was like, "What's wrong with them?" And they thought we were on the radio. Yeah. No.
See, because just so everybody knows, there is a if you're watching, on the streaming
WAMC.org.
There's a light in here, and if the light goes on, that means you're on the air. That's when you
right.
don't curse or say anything
right.
Bad. And I know the wonderful Rob, our great engineer, is going to find this little light of mine at some point. And play it.
Have fun with that, Rob. We have a light here. We have a light there. And just so all of you know this, I don't know if you realize this, but your little see the light in the panel there that right in front of you. That
oh.
when that goes on,
oh,
it actually says
that.
On means that you're on the air.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to use that.
Maybe we should put that into our introductory packet, our welcome
the
packet.
The training,
right, yes. Yeah, so we should yeah. mention that when we welcome people to the
How
panel.
How to be on radio.
All right. So we've talked about the Senate Intelligence Investigation. We've talked about the House investigation. We've talked about Ivanka as a federal employee. And we have a few letters on that, but mostly just about Rosemary. Go ahead, Alan.
There are at least 20 letters saying how wonderful it is that Rosemary's back. Ryan says, yep. Ivanka as a moderating influence is a farce. The president is signing laws undoing GLBT protections and ordering ICE to destroy families. And Ivanka is supposed to be a moderating influence? That's a laugh. From Brian, welcome back, Rosemary. Love the shrill.
Thank you.
Carl says, do any of the panelists know whether groups such as the Union of Concerned Scientists or the Sierra Club have respected or effective lobbyists in Congress? Shall I put my donations to climate change or elsewhere? Depends what the elsewhere you're thinking about is. If it was public radio, well, that'd be one thing. But in fact...
Yeah, we're fine with that, right.
But in fact, I am sure they have effective lobbyists.
I'm sure they
Congress.
Do, too.
Yeah. Okay.
And ACLU is really doing heroic
they
work,
are.
Too. They're on, overtime, looking yeah. at all kinds of onslaughts. So I admire them.
And John says, Rosemary, in these troubling times, you are my kind of shrill, a feisty blend of head and heart, a lady who is not for
okay.
turning.
Enough. Let's
More
go to
power
the news.
To your elbow, a fan. That's
Thank
it.
Thank you.
And we had a lot more Rosemary letters.
But Rosemary's done with that.
She said enough, so I respect her wishes.
All right. Let's go to the story about Brexit. The world did not end. A recession unfolded 9 months after Britain voted to leave the European Union, disregarding warnings of grim economic consequences. A nation famous for calmly carrying on has seemingly gone about its business. As Prime Minister Theresa May on Wednesday officially initiated Britain's exit from Europe, Brexit, in everyday talk, the lack of disaster was touted by those steering the departure as a sign of little trouble ahead. Ms. May told the Parliament on Wednesday there were predictions about what would happen to the economy if the UK voted to leave. Those predictions have not proved to be correct. We see a strong economy, but the reassuring talk did not reckon with one significant detail. Nothing has actually happened yet. They haven't really done anything yet. They've only set into motion the very complex, politically fraught divorce proceedings through which Britain must settle its affairs with the 27 jilted members of the European Union. John, you are a citizen of the UK. What do you make of this?
From what you just described, it made it sound like there's a very smooth, stiff upper lip going on process. But as far as I'm concerned, there's a lot of like just messing around and bad behavior going on, of just delaying the inevitable. So no one, like, the main thing that I know is that no one has a clue what is going on. I mean, it's the same problem as after you elect Trump and then you sort out the policies. You vote for Brexit and then you decide what it means. I mean, it's the craziest thing to do with such an important big decision. So for that reason, I think there's a lot of stuff that needs to be organized. So in the meantime, like, you've got Theresa May, who's been unelected but has been chosen as the facilitator of Brexit, and what she's doing is she's just trying to go about her business and facing a lot of roadblocks along the way of people basically trying to delay it, which is kind of counterproductive, you know, because I think it's a democratic vote. You can't go back on it, no matter how much of the media I have seen from back home saying we want another vote and things like that. I mean, you know, you don't know which way it's going to go because it was so tight. But I just think it's a democratic vote. You made the mistakes of putting it to the public, if that's your opinion. That's my opinion. And now you got to face up to it.
So rip off the Band-Aid.
But wait, why is it so inevitable? There were amazing protests this past weekend against it. Cameron, the prime minister who made the misinformed decision to hold a referendum, is out. A new administration. Why can't Theresa May say, okay, let's do this one more time? Why is that so impossible?
Can you imagine the equivalent of Trump being elected and everyone, because of the 51
not, not
to 49...
Not the same. It was not a referendum.
It's the same sentiment, though. It's a very different situation, but it's the same sentiment. It's once a vote is been made, you can't just go back on it. You got to follow through, because that's democracy.
But isn't that what we're seeing in Scotland with the Scotland independence?
I think you can draw a difference, because with Scotland, they voted to stay in with certain specific guidelines or factors.
One of them being that the UK was going to be part of the EU.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't in under question at that point. So they vote, you know, they vote to remain, and then Britain leaves. So as far as I'm concerned, like, I'll keep my biases of which way I think they should vote, but I think they should be allowed to vote again, because mm-hmm. their country, which is a separate country, overwhelmingly voted to stay in. So I think it's not good. I don't want Britain to break up at all, but it's fair and it's democracy, and I think you have to accept that.
I'm going to go around to the rest of the panel, but
yeah,
one
course.
Thing before I move on from you is, do you find the young people, when that vote was going, were the young people, people of your age, people in university, were they politically active and out in the streets and doing, or do you see an apathy that we often see in this country among college students of the difficulty of getting them out to vote?
I definitely saw a lot of politically active people within my student community, but then I go to a university, I'm surrounded by like vocal students of one persuasion or another, but when you put it out to like the general public and outside the university bubble, you've got a huge amount of students that just don't turn out. Not students, just young people. Here, same as here, you know, the vote was like overwhelmingly not old people, but just older people. No offense.
Everybody's old.
None taken.
You know,
but, like,
but yeah, there's a certain laziness,
none
which
taken.
Which is a shame.
Yeah, none taken. It was nice having you on the show.
yeah, that's my kid. It's ended. No more.
No, you're fine. Who else would like to chime in on Brexit? Alan?
You said, who else would like to? I didn't raise my hand.
Okay, no.
I would chime
in on everything.
Yeah. I would just say, I think it's another one of these, how do we get into this situation? It does not seem, who is going to benefit from it? It does not seem like England has a great deal. Businesses is up in the air, as is ours, which is connected to British concerns in Europe. It's just not, who thinks this is a good idea except for Nigel Farage? And who is that man?
A majority of the the people in the country, apparently. I mean, if they voted for it, how can anybody else say that?
Except that,
it
seems like remorse. And okay, if it
seems
indeed,
like,
well,
seems
here's
like.
The thing, Chris. If there's remorse about Trump, we get a chance into 2020. We're going to vote again. There's not in a referendum like this a chance for a new vote unless someone physically makes for that vote. So what I'm saying is, okay, let's do that.
I love Theresa May, though, saying that we're going to, because I use the divorce word in the article, but Theresa May basically saying we're going to divorce, but we still want to be friends. We still want to date occasionally.
do you know what? That is a big problem. Sorry, Chris.
No, it's good. Go ahead.
Is that like Brit? Like, I think Britain's always been in a position where it's in Europe, but it's out of Europe. And like the deal that we had before, we keep the pound, we get some benefits, and we have influence in Europe. And I'm going to really try and keep my personal biases out of it. And try and speak neutrally, but like it's because in the interest of not projecting the
because he wants to get back into his country.
I don't want to project the English opinion on like on listeners. It's just like so. But what you can't argue with is the fact that we did have a great deal before, and what they're trying to do now is get us something similar. And once you vote to leave the European Union, they're not going to say, yeah, you can have this, you can have this subsidy, you can have this. They're, you know, I think the way it's going to go is that's the way you voted. And I think there's going to be problems with tax and economy and also ties with students, employment. Universities, employment. There's a lot of downsides that absolutely had to be addressed before
just,
the vote was taken.
I just want to pitch again for, you know, we have to take votes seriously. We were talking about apathy among younger voters. Well, one of the reasons they're apathetic is people think, well, it doesn't matter how I vote, they'll do what they want to do anyways. And if people start ignoring, you know, referendums, big, huge referendums that draw a lot of attention and a lot of interest, I mean, you're just going to breed more apathy. People are just going to give up on the whole process.
I get the point, but if you're the leader of the country and you're looking at it and say, okay, if we do this, it's going to hurt everything, all the list he just enumerated, then do you say, okay, well, too bad. You even said it. Well, you know, Sky, I don't want to see England break apart, the UK break apart, but it's fair for Scotland to vote. Well, you know, was it fair for Abraham Lincoln to not allow the South to succeed when
was it fair for the colonies to break away from England?
Yeah, all of those things. Yeah, I mean, there's policy and rules.
Well, you know, you guys are very frequently you say that any poll is taken, including up to the day of the election, just a snapshot in time. Well, that election was also a snapshot in time, and I do believe that there can be remorse and that things have consequences. I believe, for example, if you allowed the people of America to do a do-over on the Trump election with him at 36% right now, he'd be out of here.
I don't think that's the case, actually. I think he would win again.
Well, I don't think he would now, but we do have a chance.
So if the elites don't like the results of an election, we just do it over?
No, I'm not saying that, and it's clear it won't happen. But I am saying things happen on a day, and then 2 days later, some people say, well, maybe we made a mistake. There are minors now and others who are saying, hey, he said he was going to do things, but he's not doing them. Unfortunately, you have to wait 4 years before you can have another shot.
Yeah, right. That's my only thing. We have a mechanism for this. It's like in 4 years, we check and say, hey, that decision back in 2016, you're still with it? But in England, that does not exist. There's no vote in 4 years to say, okay, we proceeded with what you told us to do. We broke up. Was it a good idea or not? That does not exist. Well, right
they can
now.
Always vote to rejoin once they've broken
up. That is true. Yeah. That's the next step for people that want to remain. I mean, I'll break the neutrality. I was very pro Remain, and there will be another chance in the future. But I think you just, I mean, if you go with a system like democracy, I think you just have to accept it. And if the government made the mistakes of putting a vote to the public and not producing a good enough campaign to stay Remain,
I think you have to
put that criticism with the government and go with the decision of the public, which is unfortunate.
Elections are always snapshots of a moment, right? I mean, there's no way around that, really, unless you want to like stretch out the vote over, you know. Over
no,
a month
we don't want
two.
To do that. Right. We already do it over 4 years. You're That's right, enough. Right. Thank you. And then the polls are wrong, and it doesn't matter. Okay, so let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll get to some letters. Alan has a stack in front of him, and we'll move on to other stuff. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Jenkinstown Motors New Paltz, a repair shop for domestic and foreign autos and specializing in Japanese cars for over 30 years. JenkinstownMotors.com. The office of Dr. Vivian Letizia Woodstock, orthodontic, cosmetic, and general dentistry, now accepting new patients. WoodstockDentist.com. Green Conscience Home and Garden, Saratoga Springs, offering natural and organic beds, mattresses, futons, and pillows. Made in the USA with cotton, wool, and natural latex. Green-Conscience.com. And Downtown Albany Bid, presenting Restaurant Week April 1st through 7th, featuring three-course meals at La Serre, Public House 42, and more. DowntownAlbany.org for menus and information.
Now this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. All in my home, I'm gonna let it shine. All in my room, I'm gonna let it shine. Shine the road.
Oh man, that is great. Is that this little light of mine? But it was that Mavis Staples? Oh, good Lord, that sounds great.
Does it get any better? And does it get any better than Rob?
Oh, no.
The man behind
Rob
the glass?
Is oh, good stuff. All right, welcome back to the roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, John Cossé, and Chris Churchill.
That's right.
Good morning. Welcome back. We've got some letters, and let's go to those, and we'll move on to other topics.
Steven says, this administration scandal plagued from day one. It usually happens in a president's second term. Cheers for efficiency, Steve.
Yes.
Good morning.
Cheers.
Good morning, panel. Welcome back, Rosemary. I agree with you and Alan. Trump makes her an employee, and they can evoke executive privilege. It's that simple. Also, she seems to always have been an advisor on this venture into politics, so why stop? And Paul says, Trump needs to be surrounded by people he can trust. Give me a break. Why doesn't he start with at least one science advisor instead of his daughter and son-in-law? That's Paul. And Mary says, seriously, Chris, there is no one else he can trust, no expert in the field. I think the reality is he doesn't know any scholars, any government policy experts, anyone outside his family that he can call on. We do not have a royal family, and the children-in-laws of the president have no place in the running of our country. Where is the balance? Who will stand up to him? Who will offer him alternative views? Who will attempt, in bold letters, attempt to compel him to follow the law? As an aside, I'm glad Rosemary's back. I always look forward to her well-reasoned perspective and insights. Chris, did you want to answer back?
I would just answer back that I think Ivanka is more likely to provide him with alternative views than any of the hired hands that he has.
Okay, but if it's Ivanka versus Bannon, what happens there?
I think Bannon goes, right? Blood is thicker than whatever's holding Bannon.
You know all about that.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever's flowing through those veins, yes.
Right. Okay, Stephanie says, uh-oh, I hear the panel beginning to settle for Trump's less insane activities is acceptable. Parenthesis, Ivanka in the White House. Because after all, the other stuff that's happening is much worse. Please do not lose your edge. The chaos this administration spins out on a daily basis is precisely to this end, and it's working.
Yeah, I disagree with that statement. I think that it seems to me that you have to, like in life in general, you have to pick your fights, right? It's
one of those things. You can't be outraged about everything or people stop.
Well, you can be,
but yeah, but then people don't take you seriously. They just think that guy's crazy. He's always outraged. You know, like at a certain point, there are things to be outraged about, and the things that you're just like, okay, that's we'll.
Because right now, if I have the choice between Ivanka having a desk in the office or us not moving forward with the Russians having an influence in our elections, I'm going to pick the Russian thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we're talking about
it. I seem to have a higher capacity for outrage. I continue to be outraged by just about everything.
Yeah,
and this
too.
Administration, it's every day. I go. But I'm on the radio show. I can't wait to get online to see what he's done in the last hour.
But she was saying, because you were the one who said it, which was that you are less concerned about Ivanka than you are about the. And that's what I'm. And that's
okay.
The
yeah,
point
I have it. I have outrage about it all, but I can rank my outrage.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That's all we're asking. Okay. That's all we're doing is ranking. We haven't lost our edge. Go
and
ahead.
Here is an excellent letter. Is the U.S. presidency now a monarchy? There is no reason why Ivanka and Kushner should be in the White House. Nepotism needs no explanation. Are they prince and princess? Can they testify against each other in a court of law? To quote Alan, this is the part I like the most, it stinks. Chris is wrong. I like that part also.
Did it stink when Robert Kennedy was the attorney general?
Yeah.
It did?
I thought it did.
Well, it did, and that's why we have laws against nepotism. And that, so... Your argument is
right, but that wasn't even a special advisor role. I mean, this is a completely different thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, Robert Kennedy is a liberal hero for good reason, and I mean,
yeah, I remember him.
Part
when
of
he
that
was,
is the work, some of the work that he did as Attorney General.
Oh yeah, I remember him when he was sitting up there next to Roy Cohn and Joe McCarthy on McCarthy's committee. That's the advantage of being 75 years old. Great liberal hero indeed, but there was that. He changed.
He evolved over his.
He evolved. He changed all like that. Okay, are they prince and princess? Can they testify against each other in a court of law? Oh yeah. Quote Alan stinks, Chris is wrong, completely inappropriate. And that's from my friend Eric, who's somewhere else right now.
Do you know what was quite interesting? Like I was talking to one of my professors, and he's a really good professor. He taught me law in the black community. That was class. It was just after the election, and I said, or someone said, shouldn't Michelle Obama go for presidency after her brilliant speech or whatever
it
was?
So.
And then I was like in my internal monologue, I was like, oh, that sounds pretty good. But then like I respect his sound opinion, and he came out with an answer which I didn't expect. He just went, no more political dynasties. He was like, he said, no more Bush, no more Clinton. Obama, no more Clinton, no more Kennedy. And he was like, I think he was a big advocate of change. And even if it's a continuation in a good way, like I thought Obama was a sound of mind kind of guy, and I kind of think Michelle Obama would be a very reasonable person as well, or whatever you want to do. But even if it's someone that you support, I think it's quite an interesting point to say no more political dynasties.
Well,
that was part of the problem with Hillary, though. That was part of the reason why some voters resisted her, because they didn't like this notion of a political dynasty and
keeping the power. Are you talking about the pronunciation?
Yeah,
or the
pronunciation.
Oh, you say dynasty, yeah?
We say dynasty.
Yeah, this is a language barrier.
Don't you say dynasty?
This is a problem I never thought I'd encounter, but people don't understand half of the stuff I say, which is fair enough.
How do you view the monarchy?
I see it very in England, it's half and half. I know people that really don't like it, say it's archaic and they take a lot of money out of the economy, but on a basic level, my personal preference, like I think they're all right. I think the two at the top are pretty funny. I think the two in the middle are pretty boring. I think the two at the bottom. Do you know what I mean by I say that?
Top,
yeah, so
top
Prince Philip, a little bit racist, kind of old, like just kind of ridiculous and quite funny. Harmless.
He's pretty good
harmless.
in the series.
The Crown.
The Netflix.
Yeah.
The Crown. Yeah. Yeah, he comes off well.
And then the two young ones, William and Kate. I think they're good people. I think they do good humanitarian stuff. They're a great advocate for Britain abroad. That's my personal opinion.
And the two in the middle would be Prince Charles
and
Camilla.
And you know what? Because the Queen just refuses to die. So by the time she finally. Yeah. So no, seriously. By the time she finally,
I love the royalty. Look at this conversation.
By the time,
damn it, I'm not dying.
By the time she finally snuffs it, Prince Charles is going to be too old. So everyone's like, oh, we'll just skip a generation, you know.
Yeah.
He's just, no, he's got his fancy crackers. It'll be fine.
But I think Joe's point in asking the question, or whoever asked about, how do you feel about
that? Yeah, I went off on one, sorry.
Well, no, but the point really is that, see, I'm a great Michelle fan. And I think Michelle gave the best speech of the entire campaign.
I would agree with that.
I thought she was great. And, you know, would you rather have one of the, you know, one of the others who was running, Paul Ryan or somebody, than Michelle? I'll, for whatever it takes to get over on the American people, I'll do it that way.
I don't think that's the either or, though. You
yes,
know, I think
it is.
The whole universe of people out there that we can choose from.
Oh, yeah?
Doesn't
name
have to be
one.
Paul Ryan or Michelle
okay,
Obama.
Give me a Democrat. Go ahead.
Rosemary Arameo.
Yeah, that's
I do want to run for office. If Paul Ryan could get as high as he has, why can I not?
Yeah. Why do we keep selecting from the same small pool, though? I mean, that was part of the problem.
May I suggest that a good speech, even a series of good speeches, is not qualification to be president of the United States.
Exactly.
Michelle gave an amazing performance. She didn't get her woman elected, and that does not qualify her. She also plants a great garden. Also not qualification to be president of the United States.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
I disagree with you and with your professor.
Okay.
I think the name of the game is you find somebody who is both popular, can get through. Literally half the country doesn't vote.
But we have no idea if she'd be a good president, like if she has managerial skills or any of the things
that you
look
for. A lot of people didn't know that about
Obama.
She
doesn't want to be president. That's also something that ought to be the part of the consideration.
Well, I think
she has
to be.
All right,
we have to take
a break. What we just did and what we just accomplished, I don't know what it was, but the fact is that we used the term crackers on the air. I'm thrilled about that. So kudos to you, John.
You're welcome.
Very, very nice.
Saltine.
And snuff, too. Yeah,
yeah,
that
snuff,
was good, too.
Crackers.
We like that, too.
Saltine. All right. Ray Graff is waiting. Speaking of going crackers.
I'm here all week.
We'll be right back.
I'm eating them.
After this. Well, good morning, and welcome back to the round. Well, this has been a very fun morning. I have this great enjoyment in this.
Will you please stop having, dear Mr. Shudrock, will you please stop having fun on that program? That's not a fun program.
Is that an English accent you're making fun of?
Because
no, that's a snooty upper...
I thought it was French, to be honest.
Like Upper East Side?
Remember that woman? She was terrific. She was a social thing. And she said...
Got to give me more.
No, okay, I will. And she said her big thing was that, you know, somebody could hold a quarter between her
God, where are we going?
We're not on the air. Don't worry, Rosemary.
I'll tell you later about ping pong balls in Thailand.
Oh, wow. Jesus. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Late night programming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the panel. I was just saying how much I was enjoying it, and then, well, that came to a screeching halt. But, all right, here we go. Good morning. Welcome. Alan, you've got letters. Let's go to those.
Anything you say, boss. Good morning, panel. Chris's statement early hit it on the head. If the elites don't like the result, let's have another vote. Unfortunately, that's what the elites think. By the way, I'm no fan of Trump in any way. Jeff from New Paltz. Okay. Did you ever notice how I always say Paltz becomes the...
New Paltz.
New Paltz. That's not the way anybody else says I say it, because I taught there for 40 years, and so I thought, you know, I could have that little... Large. Never mind. Okay, Bob...
What about insurance?
What'd you say?
What about insurance?
Insurance.
Yeah.
Insurance is another word I like.
Television?
Say again?
Or TV. Detroit.
TV. Yeah.
TV.
TV.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, Bob says, perhaps the ambition of wanting to be president should disqualify the person from running for that post. That's like being the chairman of your academic department. Same thing. That should disqualify you too, right? Okay. Okay, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Delighted to hear Rosemary's voice again. I am an admirer of Chris Churchill. We did that already.
No, you didn't. Not on the air, you didn't.
Oh, that's right. His columns.
Don't skip that one.
His columns are dynamic, powerful, and courageous. He brings those qualities to the panel, and that's from Paul. Thank you, Paul. We agree. Panel, similar to the Trump election, Joe, much of Brexit, yes, vote was mired in racist xenophobia and a lack of understanding of business and policy? Question mark.
Do you agree with that?
I completely tuned out. I was daydreaming.
I'm sorry. It was
that
just a lot of words, wasn't it?
Profound. Yeah. I was
looking,
what did you say?
Just like a millennial.
That's about the
tuned out. I get that in my class. That's like, oh,
the energy
you were talking?
Flailing that Joe was talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, okay.
Want me to read it again?
Yeah, read it okay. again. And John, wow. John, for God's sakes, pay attention, will you?
All
right, go ahead.
And get that paper in on time. Panel, similar to the Trump election, comma, Joe, much of Brexit, yes vote, was mired in racist xenophobia and a lack of understanding of business and policy, question mark.
Okay, I would have tuned out too. I don't really understand what that means.
All right, yeah.
I don't
understand
the question mark, but I understand.
I kind of get, right, I'm with you. But basically, I do agree to a certain extent. I understand why that person said that, but I don't think it's racist xenophobia. I think it's pure misinformation. I was around during the whole campaign in England, obviously. And there was just so much confusion, so much like disenfranchisement in the same way. Like the people that I know voted for Brexit aren't like, you know, they're not outspoken, explicit racists. They're people that haven't got a clue what's going on because the people that are projecting Remain or Leave did a terrible job on both accounts.
Yes, but aren't those the very people who are most accepting of sort of xenophobia and racism? I think you could. I mean, I've made the point often, and I'm standing by it, that I think the people who voted for Trump were also basically your Brexit type people.
I think there's definitely similarities, but I would add that I think it's an important point to note that I think racist people, xenophobic people, would vote for Trump and vote for Brexit. That doesn't mean all of them are racist. I think when you see people that are racist vote for Trump, I think that's why there was so much closet Trump supporters, like so much people hiding it. Same with Brexit. All the polls, that's where the polls came from. All the polls saying it's going to go one way and it goes the other because everyone's scared of being branded a racist. I think racists probably vote for Trump. Racists probably vote for Brexit. But I know some very, very moderate people that are completely just disenfranchised. And that's the majority. That's why you get 51-49% or whatever it was for Brexit, you know. It's very tight.
And got it.
Yeah.
Got it. James says, I agree with Rosemary. I think the Brexit vote was dumb as a brick. The vote was based off very little real information. The vote should have come after the plan was set. The vote was a political move that backfired, driven by distaste of immigrants. Just because politicos have failed to meet economic promises to middle class isn't an excuse to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Easy for us to say, though.
Alex says, respectfully, outrage culture is what got Trump elected. And that's Alex from New Albany. And Rachel says, is it possible the Brits are used to voting somewhat indirectly for their leaders and thus national policy, and in the referendum, they cast protest votes, unused to votes having such a direct impact, question mark. No wonder they are remorseful. They didn't mean for Brexit to actually happen.
I would say that's not too far off. I think, I don't know, I don't want to bore you with a lecture on like my opinions about the context of what happened, but I could... I think, but I could.
All right. Here I go.
What
can you do in 15 seconds?
I'll try and hold back. I think what you get is you get Cameron calling the referendum as a move to get reelected.
Right.
I think then you have the opposition who is like, I was in favour when they came in, but have notoriously been quite weak. So there's no opposition. So what do you have? You have Boris Johnson, who's the mayor of London, who comes up.
Shaming.
And he mounts a direct challenge to Cameron as a political tool to boost his career massively, because I think a lot of people would agree in Britain that he didn't personally want Brexit.
And you make fun of Boris Johnson's hair like we make fun of Trump's hair, right?
Oh God, this guy is ridiculous.
Like a Muppet.
He is a Muppet. I think there was one good quote by an English comedian. They said, I don't know if he's a clever person playing an idiot or an idiot playing a clever person, but I came to the conclusion that he's an idiot playing an idiot, which I think is I think that's pretty spot on.
Well, Trevor Noah had a great spot about the invasion of the blonde, weird hair guys, and it's your guy from London and Trump and the guy from who just lost in the Netherlands, who also has a big pompadour and
yes,
a big blonde. Yeah, Wilders, exactly. Yeah.
Well, here comes another letter. Morning, panel.
Good morning.
I was wondering, if Scotland votes to break from England, would that be the end of Great Britain? Or would England be allowed to retain the title because of its Irish holdings? Uh-oh. Thanks, Eric.
You're looking at me.
Yeah, well, you're the expert.
Yeah. Well, they'll be voting to leave Britain, so it would be... I don't know about the word great, but...
Less great Britain.
Yeah, it's slightly less... Good Britain.
Make Britain...
Decent.
Make
Britain,
Britain
great.
Decent Britain. Yeah. Half-decent Britain.
Yeah. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Oh, how we love them. panel at WAMC.org. All right, let's move on to some other stuff. Well, they're talking again, once again, about a shutdown. The House Republicans are trying to avert a shutdown. They need the Democrats. They need Donald Trump. So what is going to happen? Congressional Republicans are working aggressively to craft an agreement intended to keep the government open past April 28th. But their bid to avert a shutdown hinges on courting Democrats wary of President Trump and skirting the wrath of hardline conservatives and, of course, Trump himself. The murky path forward on government funding sparked unease Wednesday within the business community and at the Capitol, where Republicans speculated that Trump's request for money to build a wall along the border with Mexico and $30 billion in new defense spending may need to be delayed to avoid a shutdown.
I don't think it's going to happen. It's just
the shutdown?
The shutdown. I think what's happened in this country is ever since Newt Gingrich tried it and failed, and it's happened again and failed, what happens is the American people just won't put up with it. You know, they're skeptical about politicians. They don't like them. But there's a certain expectation of a baseline performance that you do. And so then if it does end up that they've outfoxed each other, then there's going to be a great big blame game going on as to who did it. Or, put another way, who done it.
Yeah, I can't imagine it would really happen either. I mean, it would just be such a sign of incompetence that I can't imagine that they would. I think they'll do anything in their power to make sure it doesn't happen.
Republicans can't afford it. We talked about this on the break. After the health care vote to allow this to happen again, when it shouldn't, it's amazing that we're even having the debate considering the control that Republicans have in the House. And here we are listening to we need the Democrats. Wow, when did you hear that last?
Yeah.
And it also, to me, is a sign of the power of that Freedom Forum, which was key, of course, in tanking the health care attempt. And now they're the ones who are saying no to everything.
I mean, the one caveat to that might be is that the Democrats force it as a way to show their opposition to the wall, right? I mean, they could do that, and they could do that with the support of their voters. And I think that...
I personally am looking forward to how you argue for a budget of constraint and rollback and then put in $30 billion or whatever the heck it's going to be for the wall.
Right.
How do you do that? We can't afford Meals on Wheels, but we need that wall.
Right, so I can see a scenario where Trump or some Republicans insist that that wall money be in there, and Democrats saying
right.
absolutely not, and a
right.
few Republicans saying absolutely not, and you get a shutdown that way.
Right.
But I don't think he would do that because I think it would. Well, maybe he would. I don't know. He's Trump. Who knows what
yeah.
he'll do.
Yeah. But it is strange that once again we're having the debt ceiling shut down the government argument. I thought that if nothing else, that would have ended with the Obama administration.
And I hate to say it, we're having much of the same thing right here in New York State right now. There's a question as to whether or not we're gonna be able to get some kind of budget because those guys, the creatures of the Deep Lagoon, are very angry at Andrew Cuomo for not giving them their stinking pay raise.
But we have this thing about an on-time budget or a not on-time budget, right? But I mean, the whole government doesn't just shut down if they don't get it done right up by the
right.
deadline. That's what's so weird and unusual about the way this debt ceiling thing is
yeah.
structured.
Right.
Well, it was never a partisan issue up until Obama. It was except for a few issues. Normally, both sides say, "Yeah, we got to pay the bills." Passes
well, it
does,
but you're right, Rosemary. And it does sort of run contrary to their narrative, which
right.
is we have to reduce the amount of money that we're spending in this country. Now they're going to have to go and say, hey, let's make sure we keep raising the debt limit so that we can have more money.
Right, and that's why some Republicans may oppose it, right? Because
I would hope
Well, the problem, though, is that raising the debt ceiling is not exactly what that sounds like. It's not like, okay, let's borrow more. It's we spent this money, now we have to pay the bills. And if you don't pay it, then you just put the whole financial security of the country at stake. You have to pay your bills.
Same
effect.
Just
like families do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we have about 4 minutes, so let me go to two topics. One is, let's talk about...
In 4 minutes? We're going to do two topics?
We could.
That'll be fun. Okay.
We could do 10.
All right. I was going to go...
The rapid fire
we may
section
not,
of the round.
We have two topics.
Go ahead.
We probably will only get to
go
one.
Go ahead.
So two allies of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie were sentenced yesterday on the George Washington Bridge scandal. They were sentenced to 2 years, 2 years each. Bridget Ann Kelly, 44, who was a top aide to Mr. Christie, was sentenced to 18 months in prison, while Bill Baroni, 45, who served as deputy executive director of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, was sentenced to 2 years in prison. And the scandal, which became known as Bridgegate, was as brazen as it was bizarre. And as all of this was happening...
That's the point.
As all of this was happening yesterday in a courtroom in Newark, New Jersey, Chris Christie was at the White House meeting with the President of
and
the United States.
And when asked what he thought of the sentences that were going to be given out or were given out, he said, you know, the judge has to do what the judge thinks is right. Talk about throwing somebody under the bus.
I'm sorry. I think he's getting his own punishment. On the day his allies were being punished for something he perhaps ought to have been, he was getting a new job at the White House.
A leadership role.
Working for Jared Kushner, who played a role. I mean, this is like major karma. Jared Kushner played a role in his being ousted from the transition team. His father was put into jail by Chris Christie. Kushner's father was put into jail by Christie. There's no love lost there. And here was a man who thought he would, A, be president, and then his fallback plan was to be a major player in the Trump administration.
Or vice president,
exactly, major role. And now instead he gets this. So he has been punished in a way far more hurtful even than jail time, I think.
And he will be, we should note that he will be running the, not running, but he will be having a leadership role in fighting opioid abuse and the epidemic in this country. That is the job he has been given in the administration.
He's still governor, though, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that is a little weird. He is still governor.
He's still governor. Yeah. He's going to do this like in his spare time.
But, of course, he can't run again.
It's a community project.
There's a limit on how many times you can be governor.
It's volunteering, Rosemary. It's fine.
Okay. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, I don't know that I agree with you that he suffered a fate worse than jail time. I think jail time's worse than being governor.
And publicly humiliated.
And under Kushner.
But, you know, also... The opioid addiction thing, I mean, that I don't think we should kind of lose sight of the fact that he's being put in charge of something that's actually pretty important because.
Except there's no disagreement. There actually is no bipartisan, you know, disagreement on that.
Right, but what solutions has anybody come up with?
Yeah, and is this the guy to get the solutions that we're going to need?
He does actually feel about this. The one time he spoke like a human being instead of a robot during his own campaign was about opioid addiction. So.
That's what we missed.
What?
You were gone.
Oh, the snark.
Yeah, that's great. All right, so I feel like I can get the final topic in.
Okay, go ahead.
So there, it comes up to Tom Price yesterday saying that he still plans, the Trump administration still plans to undo parts of the ACA. You thought it was over Friday, but no. They still believe that they can undo parts of the Affordable Care Act.
When the history is written, one of the great moments in the Trump administration is going to be that defeat. And they are smarting. They don't know what to do about it. But it is certainly possible that somebody will put all those characters in the Republican conference into a single room and say, we got to do this, otherwise we are going to look like dirt.
Yeah, I wouldn't celebrate just yet. I mean, they still have a lot of time to get this work hammered out. I know it went down in flames on Friday, but I mean, there's no reason they're not going to keep coming back at
and
this.
Part of the reason it went down in flames, among others, is it really was a stinky bill. It was a terrible bill. It was going to deprive all of those millions of people of health care. So if they had come up with something better, if they were able to forge, but now you can't go to an emergency room, you can't have a maternity benefit. Let me tell you, that was really bad.
There's a deep cynicism here, and I don't think it's lost on the population that what they want to replace Obamacare with is so inferior and much more expensive. And there's no, I don't think people are going to be deceived by the idea that Obamacare blew up or imploded. Not when you have stories like this and programs like this where we're saying they want it to blow. They're sabotaging it. And so you own that. They want to blow up Obamacare. That's not the same as the program, you know, failing of its own weight.
But the sabotaging has its own potential downfall for them, doesn't it? In other words, if you sabotage it and the people are aware of that, and the programs that they like are eliminated because they're sabotaging it, they don't gain anything, I don't think.
Especially when you know the difference between implode and explode.
Yeah.
All right.
I felt both of those.
Rosemary, welcome back.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you back. John.
Hello.
A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Very, very nice, and thank you for being such a great part of the conversation.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Chris, great to have you back, and I'm glad you're not bleeding anymore.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Alan, always good to see you. Welcome back. Well, I mean, we're seeing him in person. This is the second time this week, right?
Yeah.
So
I'll see you on Monday.
We'll see you on Monday. Excellent. But you'll be with us tomorrow morning, of course.
Indeed.
Indeed. We will be back and continue our program after this.